This is the Revitalize My Church podcast, created to help churches navigate change and reorient to a new and healthy future. This episode is hosted by the Executive Director of Assist Church Expansion, Nathan Bryant, and his ministry colleague, Bart Blair.
Welcome to the Revitalize My Church podcast, episode number 45. My name is Bart Blair. I am the co-host of the show and the Director of Church Revitalization for Assist Church Expansion. And I'm joined, as I am on every other episode, by the Executive Director of Assist Church Expansion, Mr. Nathan Bryant. Hello, Nathan.
Hey, Mark.
happy to be spending time with you today. We get to spend time on Zoom calls from time to time talking about a variety of different things, but from time to time, we get together to record a podcast episode. It's always fun to just banter a little bit about some of the things that we see, some of the things that we're experiencing in the church revitalization space. We're coming up on 2 years of producing this podcast. We've been doing this for almost 2 years with the goal of helping churches navigate change and reorient to a new and healthy future. And in our previous episode, we started kind of a little two-part mini-series talking about resistance in church revitalization, which if anybody's listening to this, they are a pastor leading a church through any kind of revitalization or renewal, probably recognized. Actually, you don't even have to be leading a church through revitalization to probably experience resistance. Resistance is pretty common. And we're talking about six keys to handling resistance in church revitalization. In our previous episode, we kind of set the table for the conversation, when you might face resistance, the fact that it is common. We just wanted to sort of establish that. And then we hit our first two points on resistance or how to handle it. The first one was don't personalize it, contextualize it. I'm not going to deep dive on this, but I think it is really important. I think it's Mark Clifton that said, you know, pastors need to be soft-hearted but thick-skinned. And, you know, you need to have a tender heart to shepherd and lead people from where they are to where they need to be. But you also need to be thick-skinned. You need to recognize that not every time people are resisting you is it personal. Might be, could be, but it's not always personal. And so it's really important that you contextualize it. And the other thing to note is key number two is that you need to listen before you lead. I think this is a piece, as I've watched pastors and church leaders try to lead their church through change and try to deal with resistance, they spend too much time talking, not enough time asking questions, not enough time listening to why people are resistant to the things that they're resistant to. So if you missed the previous episode, make sure that you go back and check that out. It wasn't the previous episode, it was the previous episode that Nathan and I recorded, episode number 43. This one's number 45. And today we're going to hit four more of these six keys to handling resistance in church revitalization. And the first one, I'll set the table for you, Nathan. It is key number three, communicate the vision often and clearly. You want to talk a little bit about what role vision can play in handling resistance?
Oh, it's the number one role, in my opinion. And I think I mentioned this in a previous podcast, but the difference between a leader and a manager is a huge difference. And lots of times, we're trying to manage people that we haven't envisioned to lead. And people don't want to be told what to do. They do not. They want to be led. And led is inspiration. They want to understand where they're going and why they're going there and how they're going to get there. And once they can cast, you can cast strong vision and compelling vision, and people can buy in and own that vision, then they'll want to be led. They want to be told what to do. Like, you know, oh, we want to go do this. And so what often happens with pastors that come into situations where they're trying to bring change to the church, they see the change, they feel the Holy Spirit is leading them to what needs to be corrected. But they've been focused on it so much that they think it's obvious to the people they're talking to. Right. Like the people they're talking to have been believing the same thing about how they do church and what they think about what they're doing for 20 years, 30 years, 50 years. And so to move them off that way of thinking is going to take a lot of vision. They're going to understand why they need to change and what is that change about and how does it look and what is the biblical premise of the change that you're trying to move into. So, you know, people need to be inspired to be lifted to a new place and to move off what they're doing. And so when we come in and we don't give vision, we just start giving direction and telling people what to do and how to do it and why they're not, you know, we're going to be very, very, very challenged to move people that way. But if we can inspire them, if we can encourage them, if we could show them where the future is and how they can get there and why that makes a big difference and invite them towards that direction, it's going to make a huge difference for sure.
Yeah. If you just want to boil down vision to another word that it sometimes makes more sense, and that's the why. It's the why behind the what. People will resist what you're doing, but if you're tying the why directly to scriptural-based, missional purpose, it's a lot harder for people to argue that. I mean, they still will. People always will. But the why really matters more than the what. And you could be talking about resisting the change of a paint color in your building, which might be a minor thing, or it could be a major thing like renaming your church or something of that consequence. And people are going to resist that, and they need to know the why behind it. A few basic leadership principles as it relates to vision. One is that you just have to remember that vision is a leaky bucket, and it is something that you have to be continuing to fill. Most leaders often underestimate how many times people need to hear the why before the what. You as a pastor, if you're going to do something like change the paint color or change light fixtures or change a class that a Sunday school room has been used by the same Sunday school class for 25 years, and now you're going to make them meet somewhere else. Like, these are things that you're trying to navigate. You better have a very, very convincing vision as to why that's going to happen. You need to be well rehearsed in it, and you need to communicate it early and often. I have a note here that says, repeat it more than feels comfortable. Repetition is not redundancy. Repetition is leadership, keeping it in front of people.
I would also say to you, Bart, that you need to own that vision. When people poke you, it should be oozing out of you. You know, and every time you stand in front of your people, you should be sharing vision. And it shouldn't be like I'm having to force myself to shut. No. People need to know. To me, there's four big questions that answer a comprehensive vision a framework. And one is the why. Is the starting, is the most important question. They need a why we're doing this. They need to know who they are. They need to know what they're going to do. And they need to know where they're going. And every time you stand in front of your people, in my opinion, as a leader, you should be answering one or all those questions. Now, you can't answer everything all at once all the time, but you need to be. And when people are you're sitting down at lunch, you're going out to dinner, they poke you. The vision is just, and your enthusiasm for where you're headed and how God is leading by His Holy Spirit is just going to start to really cause a lot of excitement about what is going to take place. The other thing I would say is you want to use people's testimonies and stories. That's going to be life-changing. When they can see that this person's come to know Jesus because of this or that, or these people are moving towards their commitment to Christ because of this or that, and it's connected to the vision, let other people share their story of life change and Jesus working in them and how they have been able to process and move from the past to a better future. So think about not just what you're saying and what you're using for biblical text to move people towards the vision you're leading them towards, but use the testimony of other people and the narrative of what God is doing in their life as they're taking on that vision and just reinforce it with their story. That's very powerful.
Yeah. Let's move on to our second point. That is, it's critical. If you've got to have a clear vision, you've got to communicate it early and often. It's one of the best ways to navigate the resistance that you're going to experience. Number four, key number four, I think is another one that everybody is aware of, but maybe doesn't necessarily know exactly how to do. And that is to honor the past while moving forward.
Yes.
The resistance that you're going to experience is most likely related to something that has some sort of historic significance or importance to people. You're moving away from something towards something else. You're changing something that has always been done a certain way, and now, you know, you're trying to change that. So, Nathan, what are some tips that you would give on how a pastor can honor the past while not worshiping the past and moving forward?
I think the first thing is just acknowledging it. Like, oftentimes the new guy is so focused on the future, he doesn't acknowledge the past. And so that brings a lot of resentment to the people that are in the room. So I would find ways to celebrate the markers that have happened. You know, if you're there and it's the 25th anniversary of the church, or it's the 50th anniversary, just to celebrate it and bring up some of the old folks, the old ideas and some of the old programs that were there, and show some old pictures, and just celebrate what God has done, because you're allowed to be in this place at this time because of what was past. So the more you can celebrate the past and to give it credence, acknowledgement. And also, I would say the other piece is allow people to grieve, because you're going to change programs. You're going to change style. You're going to change the name. You're going to change, who knows what you're going to change. Well, let people grieve. Good grief, Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
Let people grieve a little and know that they're going to, and it's totally okay. They're losing something that they had, and you're going to ask them to give that up. And so allow them to have a moment to grieve and to acknowledge their grief and acknowledge their pain and tell them, hey, I know this is going to be hard. I know that this is a sacrifice for you guys to make this choice and to move off this. And I want to celebrate that, but I also want to recognize and acknowledge it. So to dismiss people's feelings and to not acknowledge their past, and like, these things are not helpful. Like, we're here today because of what's happened, and that's actually positioned us to be able to do what God has for our future. So we're going to move towards the future with great haste and great strength and great commitment, but we're able to do it because we're standing on what has come before us. So that's really a big idea to keep celebrating as you journey.
A couple of things there. You're talking about grief. For those of you who might be new to our podcast, the episode that we just released right before this one, I just interviewed a pastor and author named Larry Davis on the topic of his book, Grieving the Loss of the Church You Love. So if you haven't listened to that episode, he does a great job of kind of walking us through the stages of grief that Kubler-Ross established for anyone who's grieving anything, and how that actually plays out into our loss in church, and how people in your church may actually be grieving and you haven't recognized their grief. So check out that previous episode. We'll link to that in the show notes. You know, I think one of the things that I think is often, when we talk about the past and honoring it, most of the time, the recent past in a church revitalization situation, church turnaround situation, the recent past has probably been challenged, which is why it can feel difficult to honor the recent past, because the recent past, whether the recent past is the last 5 years or the last 15 years or the last 25 years, as the church has been stagnant or in decline, is to naturally think there was something wrong with it, which is why the church is where it is. And, you know, sometimes that may be the case, but I'll share this. You know, I remember a number of years ago, one of the churches that we were partnering with, I was going through their relaunch Sunday, and I was there on that relaunch Sunday, and the pastor that was leading that church through revitalization preached a vision message on that relaunch Sunday. And in that sermon, to the best of my understanding, he actually spoke about every one of the previous pastors in that church, said beautiful things about each one of them, including the guy that he succeeded who had not left on great terms. And, you know, I thought it was such a classy move. It was such an honorable thing to say, we are here today because of what these men in the past have done, the good, the bad, and maybe sometimes the challenged, but God has a new and fruitful future for us, and we're going to build on what he's done here. And I think, you know, one of the things that guys fail to do is they fail to learn enough about the history of the church that they're in.
Yeah.
They think they're too forward focused and not historically focused enough.
Yeah.
And if you want to win the hearts of the people who've called you to be their pastor and you want them to trust you moving forward, they need to know that you know their story, they know the church's story, and that you love the history of the church as much as they do. You need to become a historian for the church. Mm-hmm. I tell guys that I'm coaching, when they first get to a church, I'd love for you to find all, maybe it's 30 years, maybe it's 300 years of meeting minutes from the board meetings.
Yeah.
I want you to read through those, and I want you to know the history of the church. I want you to know the highs and the lows. I want you to know when the church was having its heyday and when it was doing well and when lost people were getting saved and when significant things were happening. And then I want you to try to use some of those stories in your sermon illustrations. Because if you can do that, the people that you're leading will trust you so much more because they know that you value the history as much as you value where you're trying to lead the church.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. Honor the past. while moving.
The other thing I would say in connection to that envision is if you can get some of the key older folks in the church to buy your vision and then let them share with the congregation how they're taking on the new vision that you're doing, you're leveraging all their influence towards the future and allowing them to be honored while you do it. So it's something to consider as you think about that.
Yeah, one last point on that, and that is, I think, as part of this whole package, is that you have to remind people that you're changing form or changing format, but you're not necessarily changing values. But exactly. You can't honestly say that unless you've actually looked back at the history of the church and you really know and understand what the church has valued. So, you know, we need to marry the mission, not be married to the methodology. And that's something that we as pastors, as church leaders, we need to own ourselves and we need to help our people see. We can't marry ourselves to the method, but we want to be married to the mission. But you can't champion a set of values if you haven't actually done the work to investigate and to see and to know what the community has valued historically so that you can carry that forward. So we need to keep moving here. All right, you ready? Yeah. Key number five, know when to push and when to pause. Pace and timing are really critical here. Why don't you speak to that, Nathan?
Well, when we were at the, what's the name of the conference we were at in Maryland?
The Dream Church Conference.
Yeah, I heard a great illustration. The guy was talking about being on a Ferris wheel. It goes round and round. And when you get on that that horse, you want the horse to go a certain speed. If it goes too fast, you're going to fall off the horse. And if you go too slow, it's so boring, you want to get off the horse. So there's a right pace to actually have a really great time and for everybody to have a great experience. And I think it's the same is true when you're revitalizing a church. And if you go too fast, man, you're going to fall off that horse and then you're going to have a lot of problems too. If you go too slow, you're going to have, you know, it's not going to be any fun. There's that right pace. So pace is one piece to that conversation, but also there's also things you're going to find and do. So, you know, sometimes guys will come in and they'll want to change something really too soon, you know? And so we always say, look at the low-hanging fruit, get wins under your belt quickly while you're building and establishing relational rapport and engagement. And those little wins will give you leadership credibility to allow you to get after the bigger pieces. But sometimes we try to engage something too soon. And sometimes we don't realize what it is, but we can see as we're talking, especially if we have great leadership team that's put together that has some of that older generation in that conversation, they can tell us, hey, if you press that button over there, that's a big one because of the history of the church and this is what happened and this is how that worked and this is what, you know, and so you're trying to change something or do something you think is completely, you know, totally minuscule, but as you start to push into it, it becomes this massive thing. You come to find out, well, because the previous pastor did this, so that, what, you know, you find the story, you're like, okay, that's why this is too big a rock to push at this time, or we have to tackle this a different way if we want to get after it. We need to decide that it's not really that big a deal in the first place. We can go do something different. But yeah, we don't want to be operating blind. We want to have our radar out as we're navigating it. Not to say that every time there's resistance or there's pushback that we have to stop, but we need to be able to identify when is this something really going to significantly impact us being able to move the church in unity forward or not as we engage change.
Yeah. Just to rewind a little bit, I want to make sure that everybody understands that a carousel and a Ferris wheel are two different things.
Oh, right.
You said a Ferris wheel with horses. Ferris wheels don't have horses. It's a carousel that has horses.
That's so hilarious.
But it is a good illustration. But here's the thing. Here's the thing about the carousel.
That's so hilarious.
Is that whether the horse is moving slow or the horse is moving fast, the horse is moving. And so as leaders, as a leader who's trying to revitalize a church or renew the mission and the vision and the direction of a church, there are some, you know, we might say pick your battles or choose which hills you want to die on. The reality is there are some things that you will look at and you, if you look at the priority and you go, well, these are things that must change, then there are some things that probably need to change. And there are some things that, boy, I would like to change, but in the grand scheme of things, it might not move the needle as much as other things do. Pausing isn't stopping. Pausing isn't necessarily surrendering. I said that this point is know when to push and when to pause. But also when you push, pace is really important. So, you know, sometimes you don't want to be a bulldozer and just bulldoze through people or steamroll over people. The goal here is if you're leading with vision, you're bringing people with you. So I think it's really important that you make sure that you're leading from that vision. You are reading the room and taking time to notice, you know, what the resistance is, why the resistance is there. Don't barrel through it just because you want to get to the other side. Really take the time to do that. I mean, we worked with some guys that we've watched do this and exercise some really great discernment and wisdom. Yeah. And a short pause ultimately led to actually a really easy win because they paused long enough to deal with and address some of the things that they needed to address. And then that ultimately greased the wheels to get where they wanted. And
at the same time, though, Bart, I've seen it where guys have jacked the people up so much about the change that's coming.
Yeah.
And they have a window of opportunity to move them through that path of change because the people are excited and with them. And they just keep talking and talking and talking and talking with no action. And then you lose that window. And now people are used to what is, and you've lost the opportunity. So, these things are not... There's a science and art to leadership.
All right, let's get to our last point here. Our last point, number six, key number six in how to handle resistance in a church revitalization is to know when resistance has become conflict, to really keep your finger on the pulse, to take the temperature, to have an EKG of some sort, to know when this resistance that you're experiencing has moved into a stage of conflict, because from this point, you have to manage it or deal with it in a very different way. Why don't you speak to that?
Yeah, kind of like what I was saying before, you need to have somebody on your leadership circle that has connection to the past of the church and knows the people who can give you that vibe. I'd also like to say that it's really important that you bring someone on your team. If you don't have a strong shepherding gift, if that's not your gifting, you need to have someone who has a strong shepherding gifting on your leadership circle, your executive team, because sometimes I'm a strong doer. I like to get things done and I can move over people and completely miss all the social cues that they're throwing at me. They're being massively hurt by my actions or behavior, things that I've said. So having that person with shepherding gifts in the room with you while you're making those decisions and as you're actually monitoring how things are going, very, very critical. And you know, I've had many opportunities where I've actually said something or done something to this person and had no clue I was totally offending them in such a serious way. And then I've had another person come to me and say, hey, Nathan, you need to know that this is how that person took that. And I'm like, oh, I didn't mean that at all. So then I had to go and actually have those personal meetings and conversations. And I think that's the other pieces we talk about resolving conflict before is we need to be willing to engage conflict quickly and to mediate that as soon as we can so that we can get on the other side of having us work together to accomplish the mission of Jesus. But yeah, there are times when we are pushing and we're completely blind to the fact that we're causing so much challenge. But it's important to me to have a shepherding person on your team and to have someone from the past who knows all the players in the room who you can be bouncing things off from and getting the perspective of how it's going. So as you're navigating and pushing forward, you can getting some meter reading back to you from people who have a different perspective who can help you navigate that. Really important.
Yeah. A couple of just sort of red flags. If you're walking through a situation and maybe you're beginning to ask the question, well, is this resistance or is this conflict? We talked about this a little bit earlier. Talk about this on the previous episode that we recorded together. One is to watch for the shift of people questioning the decision that you're trying to make versus questioning your right to make that decision. So if you're the pastor, if you're the leader, if you're called to lead the church and you have a person or people in the church that are not just saying, why that paint color, but they're saying, how dare you? You don't have the right to change the paint color. You've got a different problem at hand. And so it needs to be dealt with differently. The other thing to really look for is when a person or a group begin to organize others in the church around the particular problem. If this resistance begins to go out instead of up, then you've probably moved from resistance to conflict. And this happens very quickly. It happens very quickly in a small church where it takes only a couple of phone calls and all of a sudden you've got a faction working against you. Now what you've done is you've probably moved from a place of resistance to a place of conflict. And so you're going to need to then go back to our episodes 39 and 41 and walk through how you're going to deal with conflict and the principles that apply there, because it is really different. And at this point, you know, when you're dealing with conflict in the church, it's the absolute opposite of what Jesus has expected for his church. He's looking for unity, unity amongst the brothers, unity amongst the believers. And when you have disunity in the church, it results in a different set of actions, usually a different set of outcomes, which can sometimes be a gracious parting of the ways, whether that's people in the church leaving or being asked to leave, or you, the pastor, having to leave, which is not what we want. It's not what anybody wants. What we really want is a healthy, disciple-making, fruitful church. But
and for us to do it together, right?
And we want to do it together, right? Exactly. We want to do it together. Any parting thoughts on this particular topic? We're gonna leave the topic of resistance and move on to something else in our next episode, Nathan.
Yeah.
Any parting shots here?
I would come back to the issue of being too sensitive. Sometimes we let the squeaky wheel control the direction and future of the church. And although we should be sensitive and we should have the right kinds of people around us with the counsel to make sure that we're not really offending people and not, you know, causing too much challenge. But at the same time, just because one or two people in the church don't want the change that's coming doesn't mean that the change that's coming isn't what Jesus wants. And so I need to navigate people with love and grace and respect and kindness, and we need to be giving vision and all those things. But at the end of the day, we need to see the church move where God wants it to move. And so as you balance those things out and you do it with grace and love, don't be overly sensitive. There will always be people who won't like what you're doing. It's just the way, sadly, that it is. It doesn't give you the right to plow over them and to be mean and to be a jerk. I'm not saying that. We need to be kind and gracious, but it shouldn't also keep you from moving forward. Don't let one or two people keep the church from being what Jesus wants it to be. At the same time, be gracious and kind and invite people towards the vision God's calling you to do together.
David Watson, the guy that I'm planting the church with here in the Dallas area, we had a conversation recently. We did an event in our community with which we didn't face internal resistance. We faced resistance from people in the community. And one of the things that I said to David, because he was feeling pretty emotional about it, and rightly so, a lot of it was directed to him personally. I said, you know, in the marketing world, we would typically say, if you're not offending someone, you're probably not reaching anyone. Yeah. And I would kind of look at this in this situation and say, you know, if you're leading a church through a revitalization or through a renewal, and you're not facing some kind of internal resistance, you might not actually be pulling the right levers and moving the church in the right direction, because it's almost impossible to move a church from where it is to where it needs to be, no matter how healthy it is, without some level of resistance. So our goal here is not to eliminate resistance. Our goal is not here to say, don't do anything that causes resistance, but it's really to shepherd people through the change and towards the new vision that God has for your church. And so that's my parting shot there. You can write that one down. If you're not offending someone, you're probably not reaching anyone. If you're not creating some level of tension and discomfort for people in your church, you might not be challenging them enough to move in a direction that's going to be healthy and helpful for your church. Well, for those of you who made it here to the end of this episode, thank you so much for sticking with us. Hope that this has been helpful for you. If this content that we're creating is helpful for you, we'd love you to do a few things. One, make sure that you subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcast so that you don't miss future episodes. Secondly, leave us a rating and a review. If it's 5-star, give us 5. If it's 3, give us 3. If it's less than 3, don't bother. We don't want 1-star and 2-star reviews, but we'll take your reviews and you can leave a rating, leave a review, and let us know that this has been helpful. And please be sure to share our podcast with others that you know in ministry who might be able to benefit from this. Nathan, thanks for hanging out with me today.
Great to be with you, Bart.